Hello and welcome to The City View, the podcast from City AM in partnership with CMC Markets. Join me, Christian May, each week as I talk to insiders, industry chiefs and leading figures from business, finance, politics and the media. My guest today is David Mercer, a respected city entrepreneur and CEO of LMAX Group, a serious player in foreign exchange and crypto trading in the city. LMAX Group employs 150 people in 9 offices around the world, servicing clients in more than 100 countries. Born into a working class family in Belfast in 1970, David moved to the UK in 1982 and attended one of the country's top schools after qualifying for the Assisted Places Scheme under the Thatcher government. In 1989, after his A-levels, he joined Ernst & Young as a business trainee before joining Credit Suisse in 1992. In 2011, David became interim CEO of LMAX Group, which was then losing around £1.5 million per month. The following year, David and 9 other colleagues led a management buyout funded by cash and more than a few remortgagings. LMAX Group broke even in 2014 and established itself as the fastest growing fintech company in the UK, securing this position for 3 consecutive years. Since then, the group has grown rapidly, posting $56 million in gross profit last year, with trading volumes up 15% to $3.5 trillion. Listed in the Deloitte Fast 50 and the Sunday Times TechTrack 100, LMAX Group recorded record half-year results in June 2020. Since the management buyout in 2012, LMAX has hired more than 100 recent graduates and apprentices. It's given more than £1 million to charity, including recently £250,000 this year to support the NHS during the pandemic. David, welcome to the City View.
Hi, Christian.
Now, we'll come on to talk about your journey from Belfast to the heart of London's financial services infrastructure. But first, just tell us a bit about how the past 6 months have been for you and for your business.
First and foremost, I think congratulations really to the country and the world for bearing up, and our hearts go out to everyone who've lost loved ones at this time. So it's, wherever we are in capital markets, no matter how LMAX has gone, we've been the fortunate ones. But moving on to business, I'd say I've been happy with our performance, and very fortunate to work with a dedicated group who have all of a sudden, rather than having 11 offices globally, had to work from 150 offices globally. So I make a point most weeks of apologising to and thanking the families of my workers who've had to put up with them taking over their bedrooms and the lounges of wherever they live at the moment. So that aside, if you look at the capital markets, most companies in the trading environment had a good Q1. March was showed a lot of volatility, some market dislocation, especially when you looked at the gold prices and the oil prices, a little bit of a sell-off into April and Q2. So, and then a little bit of risk off overall towards the end of Q2, Q3, a summer quarter again. So all in all, I think, certainly I was happy with the LMAX Group results. And I think for capital markets, we've had a bit of everything this year, but generally the infrastructure has held up well.
And take us back to your arrival at LMAX Group, and in particular that management buyout on which you staked so much. How did it come about, and how did you feel during that? Did you feel at any time as if that gamble, that venture, could go either way?
I probably feel that way most days, Christian. So, back in the day, I was just a hired gun. An interim CEO came in to look at a typical, well-thought-out startup that perhaps hadn't achieved the numbers on the spreadsheet. So typically, a lot of optimism had gone into spending the capital that was maybe £25 million at that stage and hired over 100 people, built some product, discovered no customers. So I came in initially with a six-month brief that said, is there anything to save here? And actually, what I discovered was fantastic British-built technology, but effectively they'd built a Ferrari and addressed it as a lesser known name, shall we say. Just repurposed the technology, you know, transitioned the cost base and maybe some of the people, refocused the product, targeted very much an institutional segment, and set about a three-year plan to get to break even, which, you know, we did, and then progressed from there. In the midst of all that, I happened to do a management buyout, and that was a nervy time, very nervy time in terms of when we did it, the company was still losing £800,000 a month. So I had to persuade my fellow shareholders to, you know, borrow money if they had to, write their own checks. We had no venture capital. We wrote the checks ourselves. But because we had eyes on a bigger prize, so to speak, which was to try and shake up this static, fragmented OTC market that was FX. And we managed to do that. We typically work in 3 to 5 year time horizon. So the first one was really proof of concept, try and get to break even. And then the second one was actually to become relevant in the institutional space. So as of today, you know, we have 5 exchanges operating globally, 3 in London, 1 in New York, and 1 in Tokyo, with all the major banks and proprietary trading firms in the world trading with us. But look, the heart and soul of an entrepreneur is always the same. So you're always nervous. You're always only as good as your next trade. You're only as good as your next decision. So it seems to have flown by, but I think, you know, 9.5 years in is about the average life, really, when you look at an entrepreneurial activity to see whether you've had some modicum of success or not.
And when did crypto come into the mix, David? And can you tell us a bit about the evolution of that? Because for some people, it's still a bit of a wild west. For others, of course, it's, you know, got major institutional players in there. So how does that fit with you?
Yeah, so we launched, LMAX Group launched LMAX Digital in 2018. And frankly, it was our institutional FX participants that literally called me up and said, "Hey, David, we need some industrial grade infrastructure in this nascent asset class." And we had a look at it. We'd stayed out of it because we had our work cut out with our core FX product. But then we discovered it was ostensibly the same technology, the same software, slightly different hardware, and we had to integrate with a few blockchains to get it going. But I had all the participants available to us because they trade our FX product. So ultimately, we got it up and running in 3 months of development time and then another 3 months of infrastructure build. So within 6 months, we launched it and we were able to hit the ground running. Now, the Wild West, as you speak of it, is because at that time, and maybe even today, the crypto market is very retail oriented. But what happened was all the major players, all the major liquidity providers who trade FX and futures and equities and the powerhouses in Chicago and London, they want to actually trade with each other. So they want to trade with like-minded institutions while still potentially engaging in the retail platforms out there. So the venue they chose, the exchange they chose, was LMAX Digital. So in a way, a lot of the distribution was done with us, and we're able to avoid the Wild West, as you call it, or the gray areas around the retail and the leverage space. So we're firmly institutional based. If you look at the biggest retail platforms out there, they've probably got 11 to 15 million customers. We wouldn't know how to open 15 million customers, frankly. We deal today with 300 institutional customers in LMAX Digital, and that's the market we will participate in for the foreseeable.
Well, look, yours is a truly entrepreneurial story. And what I find when I talk to people like you on this show, fellow entrepreneurs, innovators, certainly people that have backed a business or an idea with so much of their own money and energy, is I find that you all hold a very clear memory at the front of your minds about how you got where you are, how hard it was, and very often how it could be made just a little bit easier, for example, through the tax system or refining regulations to support fast growth companies or sectors. Now, the UK has done a lot in that space in recent years, but do you sense now that the climate may, in fact, be about to get a little bit tougher? Nobody in business is likely to be exempt from the Treasury's future tax rises, and entrepreneurs' relief, capital gains tax, these are prime targets. Are you worried about that and what it could do to the attractiveness or competitiveness of the UK as a place to invest and grow business?
The short answer would be yes. I'm worried whether that the United Kingdom will become less attractive. And I hope that's not the case. You know, we have a couple of challenges right now. One is Brexit, the unknowns of that, and the effects that's going to have on our talent pool and our ability to sell overseas. And the second bit, of course, is the after effects of COVID globally. What I would say is over the last decade, let's try and not be political here, but the UK government, or one flavor or other, have been very supportive of fintech and of entrepreneurs. We have things like the research and development credits. That's been very, very useful to LMAX Group, very useful to a lot of the fintechs. Obviously, the ability to access the talent pool in the United Kingdom has been helpful, and there's various other things. But right now, the Chancellor has a challenge. I mean, there's no doubt we're going to have to pay the bill that COVID-19 has laid behind. I think my message to him would be, you know, don't levy too much of a charge on the entrepreneurs, the stars of tomorrow, the job creators of tomorrow. It was a bit of a blow when they changed the entrepreneurs relief earlier on this year, but something I think the entrepreneurial segment can weather. I think when you start talking about increasing capital gains tax to higher rate income tax levels, you might scare away the future entrepreneurs. I mean, entrepreneurs don't have to be British or born here. They can come from overseas, but we want them to come to London because of our talent, because of our technology, because of our infrastructure, and maybe because we have an efficient and fair taxation system. We don't have to be tax-free. We don't have to be Singapore on Thames, as been mentioned. We just have to be competitive. And I hope we don't lose that opportunity because of the gaps we have to fill due to COVID. Because overall, I think net-net, when you look at it, entrepreneurs, they don't always succeed. We all know that. We've all tried. We've all failed. But when we succeed, we're job creators. We pay a lot of tax, be it corporation tax, income tax, national insurance. So I think we're real contributors to the GDP of the country, and hopefully good PR for the company. So I hope we retain that, and I hope the government invests in the entrepreneurs of the future and the job creators, because I honestly think there's no better place to establish a business. And I hope that the David Mercer the 10 years ago would still make the decision to establish his headquarters in London rather than the Singapores, the Estonias, the Dublins, the wherever, that are trying to tempt us all right now.
And the tax system, of course, is just one way in which governments can try to lure investment or talent. But there's a much deeper and a sort of more complicated, even less glamorous way in which cities and countries do that. And would you agree with me that certainly when it comes to fintech, if you go back over the last 6-7 years, the regulators, the FCA, the Bank of England have all been actually quite forward looking and quite proactive at ensuring that this, the city in particular, the UK more broadly, is ahead of the curve, or is always pushing ahead of the curve, to ensure that actually it has got the right regulatory environment. It does recognise the balance between risk and reward for those that are prepared to take a leap. Do you agree that the UK has actually done a pretty good job when it comes to laying that sort of regulatory groundwork in particular?
If I said yes, I guess the podcast would be less interesting. But I agree with you 100%. And I think if we look back over certainly the decade when I've been building LMAX Group, you know, I went on various road trips with the Mayor of London at the time, and with the Putting the Great in Great Britain campaign. And, you know, we're proud to say that we were this hub. We were the center of excellence. And certainly, you know, policy has been good. It has been entrepreneurial. It has been open door. The investment in infrastructure has been good. The support of the government has been good. Yes, so we've got a lot of things right. And specifically, you know, I work in capital markets, I work in financial services. And let's not forget, you know, the FCA is one of, if not the most well-regarded regulators on the planet. And a lot of the other regulators worldwide take a lot of their rules and then implement them and put their own local spin on it. So I think they've, on the whole, done a great job. And of course, the old lady, as we call it, the Bank of England, is one of the most respected central banks in the world. So yes, to date, we've done a great job. And I'm very passionate that London and the United Kingdom retains its place as a hub for capital markets. You know, I think in total, I saw a stat that said financial services in total is around 11% of our GDP, and long may that continue. You know, we like to do business overseas. We like to do business with our European counterparts. But even when you go and speak to them, they realize that the hub of the continent of Europe, if not Europe as we now know it in terms of the economic union, is still London, is still the United Kingdom. And I hope that any policies we make going forward will only help us to retain that status.
Do you think something like Brexit, when it comes to the city and capital markets in particular, could seriously undermine London's position as a global financial services hub? I think consistently it ranks at about number two, just behind New York, in all of those various rankings that are produced. Or do you think that even if it creates a headache or it forces people to behave differently, even move fairly large chunks of money out of the jurisdiction, which of course has been happening, that the city has the capacity, taking into account all those other things we've touched on there, the foresight of regulators and the climate for entrepreneurship, that the city will retain the capacity to innovate and to hold on to its reputation and its global ranking, you know, in financial services? Or do you think Brexit going one way or another could in fact seriously dent that?
I think we need to be aware of the risk. It is a risk, and we shouldn't be arrogant or rest on our laurels. We must always move forward. You mentioned some statistics there about ranking first or second, but you know, in foreign exchange, the core of my business, London is the number one hub and has been forever. So put that in perspective, typically London would represent 40% of all foreign exchange volumes on a daily basis, and New York would come in second place, somewhere between, depending which BIS study you look at, somewhere between 17% and 20%, so double New York City. So I think we're here to stay globally, but we need to be aware that there are challenges out there, and these challenges aren't just companies or institutions. You have government challenges. You have all these incentives around the world. You know, a lot of challenges in Asia Pacific trying to win clearing business or exchange business or listing business. So, and that's great, you know, because we are probably the center of free markets. We just need to adapt to the global free markets, compete in it, and be as successful as we always have been. But we shouldn't just assume it will naturally come to us because we are London, or we are British, or we are the United Kingdom. We're going to have to work at it. Now, there's opportunity when things change, because obviously at the moment we operate under ESMA guidelines. We operate under some people might say constraints of the European Union. So we have ability to go and do other deals with other countries, but we must work at it from employee level to company level to regulator level to government level. Collectively, we've got to work at it to retain our position and hopefully go forward. Undoubtedly, there's going to be short-term challenges. That's it. We all need to get used to having European offices that we may not have had before, a different way of working with Europe, a different way of working with actually a lot of other countries where we could have relied on the European passporting or the like. So there's going to be a few blips. And of course, the comeback, if you like, the global comeback from this pandemic means it may be a bumpy road for the next year or two. but we should be optimistic. I certainly am optimistic, but we need to make good decisions at all those levels and retain our status, again, as I say, as a global hub for capital markets. And I believe we can do that.
Just picking up on that point about the difficulties this pandemic will create for us, one of its inevitable consequences is hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of younger people are going to encounter another great setback, hot on the heels, really, of the Great Recession and the financial crisis. I know that you put a lot of time and support into hiring graduates and apprentices, and there's only so much the government can do to support that. So what's your message to other business leaders about that recruitment landscape that we're going to face in the year ahead, and how businesses of all sizes and across sectors can do their bit to ensure that COVID and the economic lockdown doesn't leave a lost generation in its wake?
I agree. I mean, in short, give talent a chance. We must do that in this country. And, you know, we should all engage in the apprenticeship schemes. You know, effectively, that's what I did when I was starting out in capital markets. We must take a chance with young graduates. And the youth, you know, they will accept that it's difficult. They may accept that their opening salary perhaps might be less than they'd hoped for 2 or 3 years ago. But we must give that local talent a chance. It's all too easy to say, oh, let's offshore it to some faceless entity in Asia, for example, or in Eastern Europe. No, give local talent a chance. I mean, we have a lot of smart people in this country. We have a lot of talent, and we must engage in it. I'll encourage all companies that are domiciled here, or even just have entities here, to give that talent a chance. You know, the level of graduate we employ today within Almax Group is higher than it's ever been. And sometimes I look at these youngsters coming out with 2-1s, for example, from good universities in economics, and I'm thinking, you know, you should have the opportunity at a bigger institution, at a bigger organization, like I did when I was starting out. You know, I had that good fortune, if you like, to be able to walk into a large bank. Those doors aren't as open. So I just encourage British companies or companies in the United Kingdom to open the door, whether it be internships, short-term contracts, give them all a chance, and from all levels. I mean, I've just engaged again with a charity in the last week or two who deals specifically with 18 to 25 year olds who are finding it difficult to get a job or to find the right mentoring. So if you can't offer a job, then perhaps offer some mentoring, some training, some advisory work. We have great talent in this country. You know, my CTO here is a product of this country, and my head of software the same. And, you know, they both have PhDs, and one of them worked at NASA, right? This happened in this country. So I just say to all employers, please give talent the chance. We have it here, right under our noses. And then, of course, we can go and battle with any government of the day and say, let's invest more in education, let's get more engineers, all of that good stuff. But to show there's an end product, right, my message would be to all employers is, again, give talent a chance in this country.
Well, it's an uplifting message, and I hope it's heard. Listen, we'll have to leave it there, but it's been fascinating to talk to you. David Mercer, CEO of Almax Group, thank you for talking to us on The City View.
Thank you very much, Christian.
Thanks for listening to The City View, the podcast from City AM in partnership with CMC Markets. Do join me again next week.